History interview number two with Mrs. Libby Rosenberg. I am Eleanor Mermelstein, and I am with my partner, Harold Kimball. We are oral history interviewers for Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women. Libby, what is your address?
2721 Mount Royal Road, Pittsburgh, 15217.
Libby, as we entered your home, we saw in the hallway a lovely framed postcard from Andy Warhol. Can you tell us about your friendship with this famous cartoonist?
Well, what are we doing, fella?
I gather I made a mistake. He wasn't a cartoonist. Would you tell us about him?
I call him a painter.
A painter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Of course, he's gone into so many other scenes,
mm-hmm.
like movies and so forth, that I don't hear too often of new things he's painted. There's a gorgeous picture of Andrew Carnegie in the Carnegie Museum. That's just a humdinger, isn't it?
They just
and
got it. How much was it? Do you know how much it cost?
No.
Okay.
I never remember those things. Is that good?
Did your friendship go back a long, long time?
It wasn't the usual kind of friendship. It was a teacher-pupil-student relationship whereby we knew Andy
mm-hmm.
when he went to Carnegie Tech, which was then called Carnegie Tech. Today it's Carnegie Mellon University,
mm-hmm.
and he was a very gifted draftsman. He drew very beautifully, and all his style, he made it himself. You know, the school may have gotten him started, but he was taught, you know, you go out on your own and you find what you can,
mm-hmm.
and he did that to such a great extent. And I wouldn't call that a postal card. It's on a sheet of paper that was folded four times till it would be in the mail, you know, without any extra coating or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And on the, so it's folded into four parts, and then you open it up and you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the date on that, I better not take a chance. I think it's 1949. Can we let that stand and then change it if we have to?
Well, it was very interesting. It caught our eye and we thought we would like to know about it. In your home, we see a beautiful collection of African art. Would you like to talk about this collection?
Well, I'm not an authority on it. We have several books on it, but my memory doesn't hold. But it, the way we got it was sadly. We got it sadly because this man was a very dear friend of ours, and he collected this way, way back when the people were just beginning to recognize the beauty. Picasso had a great deal to do with discovering the beauty of these African carvings. So they belong to this Kindred McCleary. Kindred McCleary, and he unfortunately had a place in the country. He didn't have this place, unfortunately, but he fell off the roof of his house that he had built in the country. And so when it came to disposing of the estate, we put in a bid for them. We didn't know enough about African carving to have collected such a magnificent. So that's how we got them, and they're from different parts of Africa, and they're all authentic, and they were pretty well worm-eaten, you know. We took them to the Institute. I think they fumigated them for us. You see little piles of sawdust where the, what do you call what gets in the wood?
Termite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or other they got rid of them for it.
That was good.
And do you remember how long ago it was that you got this collection?
Yes, because he died in 1950.
Mm-hmm. And the objects were all brought from Africa? They were obtained there?
No, I don't know if he ever was in it. We found them. He kept his eye open for these things. And some of them we've given to our son. And on one of them there's a label from Macy's. We used to have exhibitions like that at Kaufman's too, where they bring in these great works of art.
Mm-hmm.
Now his family, his nephew and his niece, came up to this place in the country where we were, and they came with a station wagon ready to take back all the things that they wanted. So they, I'm sorry to say that they were very prejudiced against the black people, and so they just brought this because their uncle was so sad, so happy with them. But they didn't like them because black people had done them. And it was such a waste to have them. And very foolishly, I guess, I'm not much of a businesswoman, but he had told me about some of the different carvings. And so I went and told him which were the most valuable. And then we made a price with them. We said, as many as they want, and whichever they want, we will buy for, I don't remember what we said. And so they took them all the way down, back to Texas, where they live. And then they sent us some of them, they're all good objects of art.
You add to the collection in later years?
No, who could afford it? No, we had enough. We lived in a little apartment, and we really had no business having them. And we had them in the apartment, and we just loved them. Well, we bought the house that he left, and so we kept it there as long as we could. But in the winter, the sheriff told us to be sure and take from them because they meant nothing to the people around there. We were up in 19 miles from Somerset, in the heart of the mountains. And they would just as soon use it for firewood. Yeah?
Well, it's a gorgeous collection,
yes,
and it certainly looks beautiful in your house. Would you like to tell us something about the traveling that you and Sam did together?
We weren't much of travelers in the beginning. And I guess me and we weren't so great either, but we, first, we started to see, we decided we would see our country first. And so we went to Woodstock. We went there for many summers, and that was 1930. Then we wanted to...
Go ahead.
Well, then we wanted to see other parts. We took our child with us, and we went to out west. We never got to California in those days. That came later. And we were such modest little people. We didn't have the means to go traveling. We were married for about 6 years before we got a car, and we had a Chevrolet that had to be broken in. We had to go 25 miles an hour for the first 500 miles. I think it was 25 for the first 250 and then 35 for the next 250. And we just loved Woodstock, and we went back year after year.
Where was Woodstock located?
In New York. It's the famous Woodstock, New York. And a lot of the painters of that day were there. Philip Guston and people you don't hear about today. You hear about Philip Guston because he was innovative. him. He's living today, Whitey. You know, he's gone, but his memory and what he did then gave me. So then we didn't do any traveling abroad, and then the following summers we would divide our time between Woodstock and Gloucester, Massachusetts, Rockport. Sam loved the mountains, but he loved the water too, so we had the benefit of both. Then we got to the place where we just went to Rockport.
Mm-hmm. And were they too far apart, or were they in the same area?
Well, Woodstock's in New York, and the Gloucester's in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
It's some way, and there was an artist colony there, but we never lived with the colony. We always wanted to live rather secluded, because Sam didn't have much time for painting in Pittsburgh, and when he went there, he wanted to paint. But some of the artists were very sociable. We were very wonderful friends.
Mm-hmm.
We went there. And then, I guess the first time we went to Europe was in 1958. And we took the grand tour, of course. I'll never, never forget to remember holding hands, standing at the bottom of the stairs at the Louvre,
mm-hmm.
and going up and seeing the winged victory at the top. And we couldn't believe we were there. We couldn't believe it was we that was doing these things.
A wonderful experience.
Oh, it was just so great. And then we went into the museum. Of course, there were tourists and guides leading them around. And of course, Mona Lisa just had, such a mob of people in front of it. You had to wait for your chance that you could get a peek at it. And there, right, I forget whether she's catty-corner or next to it, was the Madonna of the Rocks, which is the most beautiful painting by the same man, Da Vinci. And two or three people were standing there. See, the Mona Lisa has been advertised so much and talked about so much that the man on the street knows Mona Lisa, but they didn't seem to know Madonna of the Rome.
And did Sam do paintings there also while you were in Europe?
No. He just was too excited about it. And he made sketches, a lot of sketches. But he was in his glory because these people he had watched in the Metropolitan, and they were part of his very blood, these people, and they were so much smaller than his father, so much larger, and it was just very, very, very thrilling. So we went back again, and then the next time, I guess we only went to Europe twice, was in 65. And then we went to Spain then.
Mm-hmm.
And Spain was all together than we had thought. We thought it was all bright colors and people dancing in the streets and so forth. But truth to tell, it was rather somber. Oh, we went to Mexico one summer, and there too we were surprised because we thought all bright colors and everything. And we lived in Mexico for the... That was when the schools were not open on account of the boys off to war and so forth, so we got longer vacations. And what else can I tell you?
You said you had gone out west. Where did you go there?
Well, the first time we went was to Yellowstone, I guess. And we stopped at Mesa Verde, and we rented a little cabin in the woods at Estes Park, and we lived there, and Sam painted constantly when he was alive.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly. And Murray, in a way, suffered because we always looked for quiet places and places where we wouldn't be disturbed. Where there was
children. And so I'd be playing with Murray. Of course, he had sketchbooks too, and Sam went sketching, and we might not have seen him for the whole day. We all went. And there was a quarry up in Gloucester and Rockport that made wonderful places to sit and paint. There had been a track railroad for the quarries to, you know, bring the granite in and out. And so there were big railroad ties across the coast of the, what do you call it, the shore. And Murray was about 5 years old, so Sam tied a rope around him, tied him to the rock, to the board, so that he wouldn't fall in. And I read, and they painted, and it worked. Those were many long years ago, that was in the 30s.
Mm-hmm. Did you both agree on where you wanted to go, or did Sam choose the place?
Right here, we pretty much did almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had to go any place he didn't want to go, and each of us was excited about where we were going. Our interests were very much alike. Sam's sister used to say, "How in the world did, of all people, did those two find each other?"
Mm-hmm.
They thought we were queer.
And it was nice that you both enjoyed the same type of things.
Oh, yes. And then I learned a lot about art that I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I never became an art expert, so don't ask me any questions about
it. All right, we won't. Did you attend art shows away with Sam?
Yes, we'd go to Cleveland. We went to Chicago. We went to... when you say away, you mean while we were on a vacation?
No, I mean, let's assume he had an art show, an opening out of town.
Yes.
You always went with him?
Almost always. Almost always.
Mm-hmm.
In later years, we always did. But sometimes he didn't even go to the opening.
Oh, really?
It was impossible for him to get away.
What was it like to be the wife of a famous artist?
Well, you don't know you're famous. You know, he wasn't that famous. And you don't, you know different. And so we've made the most of whatever we had. But I loved the life. We loved the life. Sam worked very, very hard, as I told you last time we were talking about it. Worked very hard sometimes. As I told you the other day, that he just Sam worked and painted. He'd go to Carnegie Mellon, which is called now, but it was Carnegie Tech then, every morning at 8:30. And then he'd come home about 11:30, and he'd been working during the night too. And then he'd come home, take a change his shirt, shave, he had to shave very often, and take a little nap. Off he'd go to PCW, which is now Chatham.
Mm-hmm.
And from there in the evening, sometimes he'd have classes at the settlement at the Y, and all this time he was painting Pittsburgh. And that kind of painting went faster
mm-hmm.
than the kind of painting he did later.
Mm-hmm.
He just painted what he saw. And later you had to paint what you thought or felt. Of course, Esquire said that first, so I'm claim credit for that.
Mm-hmm. When you did have an opening and you went to it, was it exciting?
Oh,
what
yeah.
was it like?
Well, you know, it was, we went to a lot of openings of many, many shows.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the artist, the show was good, they had hung Sam's painting well, and he'd gotten a prize. And as it was bad, he didn't get a prize, and he wasn't hung in a good place.
But it must have been very exciting to both of you.
Yes, it was. But day after a one-man show, we were shocked. Sam had the first one-man show he had in New York. He had stayed in bed for a week afterwards. And when we were getting ready for the people to come, we were at the gallery, and the woman of the gallery said to me, "You take him out and get him a drink and sit in the park a little bit." Well, we went and sat in the park. He didn't get the drink. And that was so exciting. And we had friends that lived in New York, and we stayed with them the first time. No, the first time we had to stay at a hotel. And we stayed at the Barbizon Plaza, that we could walk right to. The Barbizon Plaza at that time, we had a beautiful room with continental breakfast pushed under our door in the morning for $6 a night.
Couldn't do it today.
It was always a deuce to afford to pay that.
Unbelievable.
Right. Then we learned to stay at other places. We liked the Barbizon Plaza. Mm. It was full of people from the continent, you know, from Europe and so forth.
And it was a convenient.
The elevator, yes. And we got up in the morning, and we'd have our breakfast, and then we'd have to walk because the gallery didn't open until 10 o'clock. We'd be up by 6, 7 o'clock ready to see galleries. And we found it best first to go separately and then meet. So we'd go, and sometimes we'd be on elevators together, and then we'd be going downstairs someplace or other, and we'd keep meeting and saying what we had seen. Sometimes we'd go back, you know, to what the other one wanted us to.
Libby, did you ever act as his business agent?
Well, they said I was his manager. I wasn't. He didn't have any business, and I didn't either. But one of us had to do it, and he wasn't the one, so I had to do it. But I was never a business agent, and he never had a gallery, which was too bad. He should have had a gallery. Oh, he had a gallery, yes, he did, for 4 years in New York. He had, where he had two shows,
mm-hmm.
1944 or 5, I think, and 1947. They were very well received.
Mm-hmm.
And up until that time, Sam wasn't selling many paintings. But once he went to New York, it was disgusting. He sold some paintings in New York and had good write-ups in the paper. Then all the Pittsburgh people began buying from him, and he decided he didn't need New York. Of course, he should have stayed, you know, gotten his paintings into the different museums and so forth. But he felt it was more important to him, being a Pittsburgher, to, there were many different in New York. They weren't buying, the museums weren't buying, and notice collectors weren't buying. So why should he? The first couple of years they paid all the expenses of transferring, you know, transporting. And then they changed that. So he decided just to stay in Pittsburgh.
Did you handle his correspondence?
Oh, absolutely. And I signed Samuel Rosenberg.
Okay.
And there was a boy that he went to tech with, and he lived in New York, I think. They would write to Sam, and he wouldn't answer their letters, and it used to just eat me up. And so I'd answer his letters, but I'd tell the people. One person I said, "Now I didn't tell Sam that I wrote this letter. We'll see how long it takes him to answer your letter." He never answered. He never answered.
Did you handle the sale of paintings also?
We didn't handle them somehow. They just happened, you know. People had asked me, there'd be a card on the back with the price on it. And Sam would be on the heard you're selling it. I heard him tell them how much it was. Looked in the back of the painting, and it was about three times more. So I told the people. They thought I was more important than I was.
Well, how did you arrive at the price of these paintings?
Well, that was just arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
We, at one time, they were very unrealistic because he'd shown the International, and they were in one of the big American shows, and he thought they're not buying anyway, so he used to ask what we thought was a big price.
Mm-hmm. I have read accounts that you were a dominant influence in his career, that you sensed his artistic change from portrait painting to abstract. How did you sense this?
I didn't sense it. He's the one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't have anything to do with that. And I wasn't so dominant because I didn't know enough about it. So people thought I was more dominant than I was. I had nothing to do with this painting, really. I loved him, and when he was working, I was very much involved. But he'd get to the place where, you know, I kept my broom in the studio. There's a little closet. And my broom and my carpet sweeper, and I'd have to put them away, and so I'd see what he'd done, and sometimes my heart would drop when I saw what he was doing. He would change a painting so completely between the time I took the carpet sweeper out of the closet and put it back, it was another painting.
How did you regulate your family life to his schedule?
Very well. We were willing to do it, and the schedule came first.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't, we never had any trouble about that. Nobody ever.
Tell us about your social life with Sam. Did you go to dinners frequently with others?
Well, as I told you before, the first year we were married, we lived at the settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And, many of the people were very surprised, you know, that we got married. Sam just a struggling artist and so forth. And we lived at the settlement. We were very happy there. And then we moved from the settlement. And during that time, there were a few people that paid any attention to us. And we'd go to my mother's for Friday night dinners and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I had two sisters here that were married. But our life was with the settlement people more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the associated artists. We went to all their things and never stopped that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go to the openings of the associated artists. And then when we had our own place, we began to do a little entertaining. And, we had a very, very active, very satisfying social life. Very satisfying.
Were your friends an artist, or did you have a wide assortment?
We enjoyed the artists the most.
Mm-hmm.
But we had family, and we had neighborhoods and communities. And but first, when we got married, everybody knew about Sam and loved him and so forth. But then we got to the place where, you know, Rosenberg was coming. It was lots of fun.
Mm-hmm. Did you
we
and
did
Sam,
that till Sam died.
Did you and Sam like the symphony?
Yes, we were members of the symphony. Mm-hmm. The last couple of years we dropped out of the symphony. Sam couldn't go. We belonged to the Chamber Music Society and the Y Musical Society. And
mm-hmm.
We used to go out to the Crick where they have little concerts, afternoons I think they were.
What about theater? Was that one of your likes?
Yes, we liked it, but we couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we lived at the settlement, we had so many times a week we would do this, so many times a week we would do that. We always had to be watching our things.
Mm-hmm.
So I told you we lived at the settlement.
Yes.
And so that was our life. We would go past
we didn't sometimes care very much for the dinner we'd had.
Mm-hmm.
It was institutional, sort of. There were about 15 in what we called the settlement family.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a store that had corned beef and pickles.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd go down after a dinner of beef hearts or something like that. And we were spending all our money at the settlement, and we didn't have very much. But we'd stand in front of this store, smell those pickles,
wow,
and that corned beef. So we bought 2 bagels and a pickle. And we couldn't afford the corned beef. So we would eat that. It tastes very good. We stand and smell the corned beef and eat the pickle and the bagel.
Mm-hmm.